Kira Woodington is a remote generalist dietitian at Gidji Healing, which is an Aboriginal medical service in northwest Queensland. She holds 3 degrees, a Bachelor of Science in Physiology from Monash, a Graduate Diploma in Human Nutrition from Deakin, and a Masters of Dietetics from Monash. Kira's role involves seeing clients of all ages with recognition as a paediatric dietitian for that area. She's here to offer her insights on life as a remote dietitian and the importance of advocating for such an underrepresented population group. Please welcome Kira.
Hi Kira, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. We're very excited to discuss all things Indigenous nutrition and dietetics with you today. Now, to start off, we'll always ask our guests some quick fire questions. So the first question is, are you a restaurant or home cooking kind of person? If so, which one's your favourite dish or place?
A really difficult question. I do love both, but I have to say, if I'm going to pick, restaurant. I just love going to experience other food that other people have cooked, and most importantly, someone else doing the dishes. but also chefs spend years learning and training how to cook, and I think it's really important to go out and celebrate that. Oh, I definitely don't have a favourite place. I just love really good service, really good food, and really good company, and I'm really open to that being anywhere in the world, any food. Really not a fussy eater.
Oh, that's really nice. So our second question is, what have you enjoyed most about isolation?
I love this question. I loved having my pajama bottoms on my pants, and then I would have my uniform on my top and no one would know. And it was just so amazingly fabulous. I love being in my pajamas at home. I just think they're so comfy, and I've got these really cool pajama pants that have got brunch pictures on them. So they've got like avocados and toast and other things. So they just made me really happy during those difficult times.
Are they like custom made or did you just
They were present, and I believe they came from the fabulous Kmart. So just cheap and cheerful, but they're really cute and they're covered in all kinds of brunch food. So made me happy.
Love that. Gotta find me a pair now. Our third question is, have you been consuming recently, either a book, a show, or an article?
This was a hard question because since isolation sort of alleviated in Queensland, I've been trying to get outside and not be stuck on the devices, because I feel like we were all stuck on the devices for so long. But when I was inside and binge watching, I was a really big Witcher fan. So I did the full season on Netflix of The Witcher, and then I've gone back into reading the books. So currently reading those books at the moment. I do like a bit of action, a bit of drama, a bit of fantasy. So yeah, I'd say that's what I was doing before we were allowed to go back outside.
Nice. And our fourth question is, what is one thing we can't find out about you online?
It's a really good question because there's so much online these days. I love to adventure. I love to explore. So on the weekend, my partner and I are usually out fishing. He's a geologist, so we go looking for precious stones and gems. We have dirt bikes, so we'll get out and explore. Being remote and in the outback means that we've got a lot of land and a lot of space. So especially after being cooped up for so long, we're usually out exploring, getting up to mischief, and yeah, just getting out into nature.
I love that. And our final question is, what did you want to be when you were a child?
I remember this. I was very split between, of course, being a fairy. Every little girl wanted to be a fairy or a princess. And I actually asked my mum this, and she said at one stage you wanted to be a surgeon. So I don't know where that dream went. Maybe the fairy overtook it. But I remember wanting to be a fairy with wings who could fly around.
I love that. Well, there's still time to make that happen. So now we're going to move on to talking about the beginning of your career. And we want to know what initially sparked your interest in nutrition.
When I necessarily enjoy, I guess. And I work alongside a lot of exercise physiologists now, and they've definitely opened my love for sport physiology, which is funny because I love being outside and playing and getting out there. I'm a very active person, but that side just never really interested me.
Yeah.
But in terms of dietetics, the area I found most difficult to study and I found the most challenging was the renal system, so the kidneys. I found that extremely challenging. But in my placements, it's something I brought up with my supervisors that it's an area I found difficult. And I actually got put on the renal ward during my placements. And now I'm not an expert in renal, but I'm quite good at renal. And I see a lot of renal clients every day. We have a dialysis unit here in Mount Isa, and I work alongside the renal dietitian here. And so even though it was so difficult and complex to study, in real life, it's amazing to practice. Absolutely amazing to practice. It was worth the pain of study, and I know lots of people don't enjoy learning about the kidneys, but in practice, in reality, when you're sitting here with clients, it's extremely rewarding, and I'm so thankful that I really gave it my all.
Yeah, and how great of your supervisor to kind of just be like, throw you in there. At first it might be like, what? Like I said, I didn't want it. But it's amazing to hear that you kind of came out the other end with a greater appreciation for it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a bit about your placements that you did complete during your degree? Like, how did you get them?
So in terms of placements, my first clinical placement, which was just a couple of weeks, I was down in Rosebud, so in southern Victoria, just an acute little hospital down there. I really loved that experience because it was just a little hospital and it was a really easy pace to learn and pick up. And because it was so small, you were really a part of the team. I eventually moved on and my bigger clinical placements. My later clinical placements, I was part of the students that were sent to the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, which was a truly fabulous experience. You apply separately to do that through Monash. So Monash have the connection with the Royal Children's, and you have to fill in, I don't know if they still do it, but at the time, you had to fill in just some questions about why you would like to do pediatrics. It took some extra learning. You had to do some extra time. And I'm really glad that I did it because I am now a pediatric dietitian. But that was a truly wonderful experience. The Royal Children's is, especially in Melbourne, is an amazing place. It's an amazing building with amazing health professional staff in it that are really, really focused on that child. So that was I can't describe that experience. That was amazing. And finally, my final adult placement was Box Hill Hospital, which is where I did a lot of my renal stuff. So in terms of clinical, I had a really positive clinical experience. It is extremely tough, especially being a student, because I also had my own job that I had to do. So you do a full day being a dietitian, a student dietitian in a hospital with the same hours, and then somehow fitting in your part-time or casual job around it because you still needed to earn money. So it was, I remember it being exhausting. It took up pretty much all my life. Some of my friends were messaging me saying, we haven't seen you in ages. I was like, yes, because I'm either in a hospital, at work, or sleeping. But it was absolutely amazing. And all my supervisors that I had along the way got me to where I am now. So I can't complain. So that was the clinical placements, but the best placement of all, and I think most dietetics students will say this, was our public health placement with Claire Palermo. I was actually placed at Monash University. Really cool. So me and my team, we worked with the nutritionist for Monash University and we looked at all campuses in Australia, and we assessed every drink, beverage and food item for the traffic light system, the Victorian traffic light system, as green, amber or red. And we also did price comparisons between the healthier items and the less healthy items. And we did a big project based on that. So we absolutely loved it because it was our own campus. I'd been going to Monash for several years by that stage. So it was really cool to really find out what food was being served at Monash. During that time, you have a lot of independence. We had excellent supervision. And we had a beautiful project at the end of that. So I have really positive experiences with all my placements.
Oh, that's amazing to hear. And it's great to hear how diverse yours is from like, yeah, that clinical base, but even within clinical, how different it is as well, which is really, hopeful and, exciting for prospective students.
Kerry, just to jump in there, did you do any regional placements? Did you do one?
I just forgot that I did that. Yes, I did Sale. So we did our food service placement, my colleague and I. We went to Sale, so Gippsland, Victoria. There was only one regional placement and that was it. And the colleague who I did it with, her parents just happened to own a property down there, and she was putting her hand up. And we were literally sitting, studying, and she was filling in, saying she was going to go to Sale. And I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, there's a food service placement in Sale. I'm going to put my hand up for it. No one else will want to go. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll come. It took no thought. I didn't think about it at all. And she was like, oh, great, let's go. And that was the whole conversation. And we lived on her property down there. And we shared driving in and out of Sale. Her property was just outside of Sale. And we did our food service placement there. And I just came home each weekend. So on Friday, when we finished at the hospital, I would just drive back to Melbourne so that I could do shifts on the weekend for work, because I still had to work. And then on Sunday, we would just drive back out there, start again. So wonderful experience. And when you go regional, and I would recommend going regional, they are largely short-staffed. There's not enough funding for enough clinicians. You are a really valued member of the team. You're not just the student dietitian that they're trying to come up with activities to fill. They really need you. They need you. They want you. They have a list of things that need doing as well as your project. And we really got thrown in the deep end. And we just really worked alongside the food service staff and the beautiful staff on the wards to see how we could help in any way and lend some expertise. And we were just so highly valued out there. And I would highly recommend taking the regional placement, because you just get such a beautiful experience that you just don't get in the cities.
Mm. Can I ask, how long was that placement for, the regional one?
I'm going to say 4 weeks.
Okay.
It was a while ago now. It was pre-pandemic. I feel like it was 4 weeks. So the placement can be 6, but you spend... if my colleagues are hearing this, they're going to be like, nope, wrong. I believe we spent a week preparing, and then we went out there for 4 weeks, and then when we came back, we had a week to get our project together and our presentations together. So I think we were out there for 4 weeks. So it's really not that long to try and juggle work. And we just had a great time. And in the afternoons and after work, we would just go explore the countryside. I didn't really know Gippsland very well, so we would just go out and check out the farms and just go explore. Yeah, it was really great. And as someone who worked during uni, because I had to support myself, it was actually really great to have some time away from work and actually enjoy evenings off, which was quite a novelty for me. And yeah, so it was fabulous time.
Yeah. And do you think experiences like that have shaped who you are today, or were there any other formative experiences that contributed?
Definitely being regional prepares you for being remote. And there is a difference between regional and remote. Like, as I said, I would drive after work from the hospital to Melbourne because that was possible, because that was only a 2-hour drive. Whereas when you're remote, where I am right now in Mount Isa is 10 hours to Townsville. So, you know, our access is extremely limited. So it's just regional just starts preparing you for the reduced services, the reduced access to groceries, the reduced access to people, and really just exposes you to what it's like to just be in a really close-knit community. And you are quite isolated, and I believe being regional just sets you up for being more remote. Yeah. It isn't for everyone. Sometimes regional is enough for some people, but it definitely, if you are considering being remote and working in some of Australia's more remote or extremely remote regions, definitely taking a rural placement or a regional placement helps you understand what it's like to be out there, especially if you've never been out there. It definitely shapes and definitely helped me get a job out here, because it shows that You're up for thinking outside the box. You're up for travel. You're up for exploring. And that's all what being out in remote regions is about. It's just about getting outside your comfort zone and giving it a go. And that's all you can do out here is just give it your all. So I guess in terms of like formal experience, that was probably the best one. Yeah.
And speaking, like talking about going outside of your comfort zone, what was going regional something, was that, going regional, stepping outside of your own comfort zone? And also for students, how would you recommend they take those like healthy risks to step outside of their own comfort zone?
I think the way you approach it is going to be really different for everyone. I'm a real gung-ho person. So my friend said I'm going and I was like, let's go. Like if I put no thought into it. I was like, yes, I want to be, I knew I wanted to be remote when I graduated. I always knew that. So doing that regional experience, I was like, yes, let's go, let's get out of the city. But for some people, you do have to work and you do have to earn money. And so it sometimes needs to be a discussion with your employer or with your family about, I'm going to go away for this amount of time. Is this okay? Like, can I support myself? Can I do this? So you definitely don't have to be as gung-ho as I am, but definitely chat with the people around you, chat with your employers. See if there's a way to do it, because the payoff is huge. The experience is to go out there, to be really well respected as part of a team. Towards the end, they kept forgetting we were students and we were just called dietitians towards the end. And we kept having to correct them that we were students because they just so valued us being a part of the team and being there and helping out. These regional areas are just so understaffed that they really, really value having you as a student there compared to the bigger city hospitals where sometimes you can be lost in the mix. So look forward to it, because if you ask your lecturers now, they will know whether a regional placement will be coming up in the future. So you have time to plan around it. So if it's something you're thinking of, please approach your lecturers now, because it's something they can either tee up and organise, or it's something that they already have one there and they look for people to do it. And they said they were really thankful that my colleague and I stepped up and said we would go, because otherwise they were just going to have to pick people to go, because someone had to go. And so be that person that stands up and goes, yeah, I'll go. Why not? It's only 4 weeks. It was 3 years ago now. Time moves so fast, and I promise you, you'll have a wonderful time. It's absolutely worth the risk.
And just to wrap up this section, can you tell us, coming out of uni, were you ready for a career, or did you find there was a steep learning curve?
I was definitely ready to be a dietitian. I don't know if anything prepares you for remote dietitians. And the idea is, when you finish uni, is you're not supposed to know everything. You're not supposed to be the expert. You're supposed to be competent in what you know and competent in what you don't know. And having a good network around you, so if you don't know the answer, you have people to go to. And I felt really confident that I knew I could do this moving forward. You feel like you can do this, and there's going to be a lot of areas you need to improve on. The first year you graduate is the year you will learn the most. You will hone in your note-taking skills, you'll hone in your mentoring skills, you'll hone in all the skills that you've learned at uni will be really put to the test. So your first year will be your most learning curve year, I guess. I don't think anything can prepare you for remote health. I think even health professionals who have been health professionals for 10 years and come out remote are still not prepared for remote. I don't think you ever can be prepared for remote. You just got to come here and give it a crack. And that's what makes remote learning so fun and remote health so fun, is you never know what the days are going to look like day to day. And it's just such a rewarding experience being out here. So yeah, absolutely. Monash made us ready, and I am very grateful for the education I received.
That's wonderful.
Have a look at your career now. So can you tell us a bit about the next steps for you after graduating from Monash with your Master's of Dietetics? So how did you land your first graduate role?
I love having a little chuckle when people ask me this question. As the colleagues that I graduated with and my lecturers will know, I always wanted to go remote. With my family, I originally am from England and we've lived all over Australia, and we lived 6 years in Arnhem Land, remote Northern Territory, right up the top. So I did high school there before coming down to Monash for university. And my parents currently live in remote Papua New Guinea, which is the country above Australia. My sister is also a health practitioner. She is a nurse and she is also a remote practitioner. She lives in the outback with me as well. So being remote and being adventurous runs in our blood. And I knew that I was going to be remote. So all my colleagues knew that. We knew we were going to be remote. And as I did placements, I spoke to supervisors. And I spoke to people around me because they would say, you know, there's a graduate position at this hospital when you finish. Do you want it? And that sparked the conversation of, thank you, no, I am going to be going remote. And you'd be so surprised the amount of dietitians who have worked remote who have contacts remotely. And I was already starting to build my remote network long before I graduated. And so as I was approaching graduation, I started reaching out into this network, just what jobs are out here? What can I do? As I said, my sister's a nurse. She lives out here in Mount Isa and she'd been here 3 years at the time. And I said to her, I want to go remote. Where shall I go? You know, we're not from Australia. Our family live in a different country again. Where do I go? Like, what state do I choose? And she just said, why don't you come to Mount Isa? And I said, all right, let's do that. Again, very little thought. I was like, yeah, let's go. So after graduating, I packed up my car, packed up my share house, and I drove 8 days into the outback, up the coast of Australia. So I drove up the coast of Australia, I got to Rockhampton, I turned left, I came inland and a little bit north, and 8 days later I'm here in Mount Isa. I did not have a job or anything lined up. On the way of travelling, I was looking at Seek, I was looking at job ads, my sister was sending me stuff from her contacts. I applied for a few jobs on the way and I got interviews for them on the way. One job I got was for Longreach, which is a 6-hour drive south of Mount Isa, and I did the interview for that. And then I arrived in Mount Isa whilst I was waiting for that. And the moment I got here, everyone I met wanted to see a dietitian. There are so few dietitians here that even just meeting people on the street, meeting people saying, I'm a dietitian, I'm just looking for work, I realised the need for dietetics out here for all populations. And I decided to open my own private practice, which is what I did. So I had only been graduated a month when I decided to open my own private practice in the remote outback. And I did it out of a pharmacy. I have pharmacy experience. So I worked alongside one of the pharmacies, one of the big pharmacies here, and had my own clinic space. And I started to see private practicing clients. And through doing that, I have pediatrics experience, and I come from remote communities of Australia. And so the town is a very small town. Started learning there was a private practice dietitian with all these very strange and random skills who's just arrived. I got found by some of the other local dietitians in town, and I got asked if I would consider going for the position with the Aboriginal Medical Service, Gidji Healing, because I had some cultural experience, not Queensland cultural experience, but I had Northern Territory cultural experience. I was open to FIFOing in or fly in, fly out of the remote communities that are here. And I have the experience of children and pediatrics, which is quite rare out here. And so I went for the job interview and here we are. I worked full-time for Gidji Healing whilst also operating my private practice on the weekends. So I worked 6 days a week for my first year. And then at the end, just before the pandemic, I gave up my private practice to solely work for the Aboriginal Medical Service, as I could see the beautiful way that we were going to improve health and nutrition for this entire region. And here we are. I'm sitting here in my office, which we have now taken over one of the kitchens here at Gidji Healing, so that our client interactions no longer have to be just talking. We can cook, we can tea, we can just hang out and make nutrition and dietetics a bit less stigmatized and a bit less stereotyped. And yeah, here we are.
That's That's incredible. What a story. I can see why you kind of laughed because it's just, that's amazing. And I think so, I mean, we've had so many different perspectives on this podcast, but I think it's, you know, clear that sometimes you've just got to just do things and take action. You're amazing. Was there any time, because I mean, you set up a private practice a month after graduating. Were there any kind of doubts that you had to silence to take that move?
Oh, so many. So many. And you don't learn about private practice. You don't learn about being a businesswoman when you're learning dietetics. I have absolutely no experience running a business, just so everybody knows. I'm not some businesswoman. I have customer service experience, and I worked as a pharmacy assistant during my dietitian studies, but by no means was I in a great space to open up a private practice. But people around me, just every time I went out to parties or I met my sister's friends, they'd be like, can I please come see you? I really need to see you. There are no dietitians here. I was being offered dinner, cups of coffee in exchange for a chat, because people here are really struggling. We have a huge amount of IBS out here. There were people really struggling with their health and unable to access dietetic services. And so I just really saw the needs, and I just thought, I've just got to do it. There's no competition out here, which is quite sad, because there really should be. There's so much need out here. The hospitals are full. Bulk billing services were full. The Aboriginal Medical Service was down to one dietitian. And I was like, let's just do it. And I had fabulous mentors. And every day I was like, can I do this? And I could. And you've just got to believe in yourself. And if a client came in and I really didn't know what was going on, or I really couldn't help, I would say that. I was very transparent with clients about, you know, this is quite complex. I think I need to refer you over to the hospital. Or this is really complex. Can I please make some calls and chat to some people about the best way forwards? Can I see you in a week or something? And because I lived here, because I wasn't coming in from the coast, because I lived here and you could see me at Woolies and I was a real person, people always came back to me, and people loved having someone living amongst them who understood how hard it is to live remote, how expensive our food is, helping them. And I do run into clients at Woolies and I'm like, check out my trolley, come have a chat, show me products. What do you need help with? It's about being a community dietitian. So you never stop being a dietitian. Just because you walk out of your office doesn't mean you stop being one. And so people come up to me in Woolies and they'd be like, oh, my friend really needs to see you. How do I do that? And I got all the GP practices on board to start sending me referrals. And before you knew it, I had a 6-week wait list. So it was incredible. And I absolutely would have kept up my private practice had it not been for my love for remote health and Indigenous health in particular, and the opportunity that came up at the Aboriginal Medical Service to really expand my remote skills, because I truly loved operating my private practice. I never thought in a million years, I did not graduate from uni thinking that's something I'm going to do. I thought I would do Indigenous and remote health. But I wasn't aware there was a job going here, because they'd already closed the job application for this role when I got here, but they just hadn't found the right applicant or the right fit. And then I just so happened to bumble into town and open my practice, and everyone was like, have you heard of this dietitian that's from the south who has all this weird experience, who's just arrived? And that's how I got found, just word of mouth really, and people finding me in a small little town. And since then, lots of people contact me now and ask for advice across the whole Lower Gulf, because I'm just a community face and I'm someone who's trusted.
Mm. And can you walk us through kind of your role now as at Gidji Healing? So what is sort of your typical week look like in this role?
Yes, it's very varied. On paper, I am a clinical dietitian, which means that I see clients one-on-one for a range of illnesses. Usually they're not so acute, Most acute cases or any acute discharge patients from the hospital will be seen by the hospital dietitians. So things that are less acute, or you've been discharged and you don't need to be seen by outpatients, will come across to us. So that could be anything from a surgical discharge, or type 2 diabetes is extremely prominent amongst Indigenous populations out here, kidney disease. I see a lot of IBS, as I said. There's a lot of gut distress out here. We see a lot of reflux. I see a lot of kid. We are in the process of, for the first time, diagnosing children with fetal alcohol syndrome and autism spectrum disorder. So I'm involved in that process of finally flagging these kids that have gone largely unsupported and undiagnosed. We're working with Griffith University to do that, which is really exciting. So I work a lot with the mums and the kids. So that's my clinical sort of caseload, I guess. And really I can see anything. And then on top of that, we also do a lot of community engagement. So it's a lot about getting into the community, making sure they know your face. So I'll go down to playgroup and just engage with the mums and make sure they're going well. We help run cooking classes at some of the schools, or with the school kids after school. We get involved in big community days, and sometimes it's not about preaching dietetic information. Sometimes it's just being a part of the community. So I just go down and help set up a stall, or help play with the kids, and just be a part of the community and start being a face so people trust you to come to you. And then when I'm not in Mount Isa, so right now I'm here in Mount Isa, this is where my bed is. And then we also look after the three remote communities that surround the Lower Gulf, which are Goomagee, Normanton and Mornington Island. I looked after Mornington Island last year, and I've now passed that on to my colleague. And I continue to look after Normanton, and my colleague looks after Goomagee, so there's two of us. And so once a month, we FIFO, or fly in, fly out of these remote communities. We'll stay there for the week and do the same thing there. We'll see patients one-on-one. We will go do some cooking classes or some events, or we might just get engaged with the community. And then we will come back to Mount Isa after the week and continue our workloads. Yeah. And then on the side, when I'm not doing all those things, I'm also a part of some food security inquiries that are currently happening in Queensland. So recently there was a parliamentary inquiry into food security in remote regions of Australia, of Queensland, sorry. On behalf of Gidji Healing, I submitted evidence into that inquiry, which can be found available online through the parliamentary website. And the idea was to start getting people understanding and knowing how hard it is to live remote and how expensive and low quality our fruit and vegetables are out here. And even as a dietitian, we're sitting here encouraging people to eat healthier when it is extremely expensive to do so. And from that inquiry, hopefully a lot of research and a lot of things happen from that. And so I'm a part of that at the moment, as we just try to improve the research in this region, and we try to improve quality and affordability of food in our region, and also the access. We have no public transport out here, so if you can't drive, how on earth do you get to your store? So I'm part of all that as well, which is what I do sort of on the side and in the background. I liaise with quite a lot of big organizations who we're all on a path to improving food.
What incredible work you do, and it's so beautiful to see how your work is so valuable to a community a community like that. And it's amazing, like, you can just, you know, yeah, they know you from just going to the shops and building that rapport. I think is so important. And yeah, I guess thank you for that work that you do, because yeah, it's so valuable, and it's really progressive and needed in Australia and obviously beyond. But yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Happy to do it.
How did you go about, I'll rephrase this question a bit. Do you feel like you had to change kind of your approach or anything that you learnt at university and kind of mould your knowledge to the setting, or was it quite transferable?
A bit of yes and no.
Monash definitely, compared to, I know, some other universities, we definitely have a really strong focus on culture. We are really taught a lot of the barriers that affect Indigenous populations accessing health and healthcare and other services. So I definitely felt like Monash gives you a strong base. However, the way we learn how to communicate and educate clients is very Western. And that was probably the biggest learning that I have taken from this role, was how do I communicate what I'm talking about to this client in a way that's understandable, in a way that's relatable, in a way they should care, because to them I'm just another health professional, I'm just another face. How do I make this meaningful? And it's really Western and really complicated. And I was like, does it need to be that complicated? For example, with type 2 diabetes, which is the most prevalent chronic illness for this region, they need to know literally everything about type 2 diabetes to live a healthy life. Because I feel like some health professionals don't even understand how diabetes works. And they're confusing clients, and clients keep hearing different stories, and clients would end up in my room being like, I don't really understand. Like, I have this thing and my family members have this thing, but I don't really get it. And why should they care that their blood sugars are high? Because there's no pain, or, you know, there's no immediate side effects of that. Your blood sugars are high. So what? Why should I care? And I realized that all the doctors they were seeing, all the nurses they were seeing, were just confusing the story. So I created my own story. It took me a while to build, but I was like, how can I get this across of how sugar is affecting your body? And so I created, I call it my sugar rock story. And I talk about how sugar is like rocks in the body. And depending on how well you control your rocks depends on how much damage they can cause inside. And I started relating it to feet. And the connection with podiatry, with the eyes, and the connection to optometry, which are both part of my chronic illness team out here. And I also started connecting it to the kidneys, because renal disease is extremely prevalent. And I needed a way that everybody understood how sugar affects you, so that they can start understanding why they should care. So sometimes I don't even use resources in physical form. Sometimes we just sit around and have a yarn, and I have a rock story. If you'd like a copy of it, I have a recording of it. One of the podiatrists recorded it. So when I'm not in the room, she can play this rock story to clients with diabetes, just so they understand why they're here and what's going on. And we've started just building our own resources with the help of the community that makes sense at work. And just really stepping away from the way we learn, which is just so Western. It's like, do this, do this, do this, do this. Yep. See you next week. And I found a lot of clients that are discharged from hospital, they're just given so much information from so many health professionals on discharge, and it's all white pieces of paper with black writing. They're just like, I don't know. I think I saw a dietitian. I don't know what she said. She was really lovely. They always say they're very lovely, but they just don't understand what they're supposed to do now.
Yeah. And do you think, because we've been taught, like, Indigenous remote communities, lack of literacy, lack of access to resources, all those things. Do you think there should be more? Because we do learn about it, but in terms of taking what you're saying about moving away from that black and white writing style, how would you kind of recommend for further learning? And if you are interested in this area, how to kind of be more approachable and be more in tune with the community and the culture you're interacting and helping?
That's a really big question. And I think it's important, and I always say this, understanding culture and understanding the culture of the place where you are. Cultural training is not a tick box. You don't just do one-hour lecture or webinar and woohoo, I'm culturally safe now. It's about constantly learning and constantly meeting with the community and knowing your elders and knowing the community and listening to them and listening to what they want. So we work in numerous communities throughout the Lower Gulf. They're all different. So every time you go into one, it's about relearning what's culturally appropriate here, what's this community looking for, and how do you best interact with them? And so just because I did one cultural safety lecture in Victoria 5 years ago doesn't mean that I am now culturally safe to practice in these communities. And I think it's about being open and vulnerable to new experiences, and really putting yourself out there. And there's a whole movement, and I'm definitely not the expert on this. The beautiful woman in Victoria, I hope she doesn't mind me mentioning her name. Her name is Robin Delbridge, and she is one of the dietitians and lecturers at Swinburne University. And she does a lot about racism in our field, because at the end of the day, we are a predominantly female, white population. And that's okay. Understanding that I'm a little white girl who's not even Australian, who's going into these communities, and just understanding that no matter how open I am, that I am still a little white girl, and that I need to understand the deeper racial ties there. And there, Robin's work is absolutely amazing. And if you'd like more info, I'd highly recommend looking into her work, because she works really strongly in this field. But it's just about accepting who you are and knowing who you are inside, and then really opening yourself up to this other culture and this other experience, and always learning and always growing and always asking, you know, questions and asking what they need. It's not about what we know they need. It's about them seeking us about what they need in that time. In terms of resources, it's extremely lacking. There's not enough Indigenous and culturally appropriate resources. There are some Aboriginal medical services who do excellent ones. Apuna Pima is one. The Kimberley's Aboriginal Medical Service is another. And you can always go to NACHO. NACHO stands for the National Aboriginal Community Control Health Organisations, and they have a resources page, and they've got some information up there as well. Make your own. Work with the communities. Make your own. It's what I've done. And just learn what when you're having chats with clients, what aren't they understanding or what isn't going through, and how can you best change that? Working with your speech pathologists as well, if you're lucky enough to work along speech pathology, they are just amazing at communication on all levels. I'd really recommend, having a chat with your speakers as well.
And just to wrap up this section, I think we've definitely touched on it, but just to kind of give it its own, how is kind of being a remote generalist dietitian different to being a metropolitan dietitian, and kind of in what ways is it perhaps more fulfilling or more challenging?
I'll start with the fulfilling. As I said earlier, my job is so broad. I don't know what I'm coming into every day. Every day is a new experience, a new challenge. I always say we're never bored. There's always something. So especially if you are graduating or you are a student and you're thinking, I'm learning so many things at uni, what do I want to do? Coming remote, you get to do a bit of everything. I do a bit of food service, I do a bit of public health, I do a bit of clinical, I do community engagement, and I've really found what I love. What I'm like, yeah, that was fun, but I'm a bit over it. Or you just really get to find out what you would like to do moving forwards. You're also one of the only nutrition experts for thousands of kilometres. So lots of people come to you about a lot of topics. And it's really exciting to be in remote regions because it is a small town. Everyone knows you, and it's really cool to be at Woolies and be like, hey, how are you going? And your shop takes twice as long as it would in a city because you just keep bumping into people and saying, hey. And it just comes with so much more life experience than Metro could ever offer. The challenge is, of course, you are extremely remote. I'm 10 hours from Townsville. That is my closest town. Or we have to fly. And flights are expensive. There is a higher cost of living out here. You are away from loved ones. And, during COVID, I know lots of people have been away from their loved ones, but we have been extremely isolated out here. When you live remote, they always say you need to carve out time in your year to get out, go to the coast, be with other human beings, and be a part of civilization. And so for this year, for people who have lived remote, across the country, that has been extremely challenging because we've all been isolated and inside. And so when we all started going into lockdown and people were like, oh, I can't go to the cinema. Oh, I can't go to the shopping center. Nothing changed for us yet because we don't have shopping centers and we don't have cinemas. So you guys were all panicking that these things were disappearing, but that's just life for us. Like nothing changed for us initially. It wasn't until we were inside and, you know, the stricter restrictions came in that it started affecting us. So I think the rest of Australia got to experience what it's like to have nowhere to go and to not be able to see your family because they are thousands of kilometres from you when you're out here. But the challenges are so outweighed by the amazing experiences you have out here. And in contrast, if you're graduating or you're looking to graduate, you may end up in a metro hospital on one ward and you don't know if you love that ward. But like I said, I studied renal and found it extremely difficult. And if you'd have asked me to be a dietitian or work on a renal ward when I graduated, I'd have been like, oh, I don't know. But now I've worked in it, I love it. I love working in it. And I only got that because I work remote and I got to work across all clinical areas. And if you stay metro, you may get stuck in that clinical area and you may not be able to move on. Whereas out here, you get to just experience everything.
That's, yeah, I love it. Very convinced. I now will move on to our final section, which is looking, kind of getting you to look back and give some advice for students and graduates who are looking to pursue a career in Indigenous health. Now, I have a few questions here that I'm going to skip because I feel like you've given us a fantastic understanding of what you kind of do as a remote generalist dietitian and how, you know, you've really, I guess, demonstrated that cultural competency is not a box-ticking exercise and it's a continuous, you know, practice and, you know, I'm sure, I'll ask a question on that. Have there been kind of times that, you know, I think often, even I think this year particularly, we've been, particularly on social media, we've been told, you know, sometimes you've just got to accept that you will get things wrong, but you need to kind of keep trying. And how has that kind of played out for you as a nutrition professional in this space?
Absolutely, you'll get things wrong. You know, especially as a graduate, you're a graduate dietitian, you're not supposed to know everything. It's more understanding what you don't know and knowing your limits. That's the really important part. But definitely, and I think any health professional listening will definitely know this feeling where you think you've done the right thing for a patient or multiple patients, and then you go away and do some professional development and you go, oh my gosh, I did that so wrong. I think I may have done a really terrible job, or oh, I didn't do good enough. And now that you've got this professional development, you're going to do better moving forward. And that's okay, because we all do it. You don't know what you don't know. And so I always encourage people to make sure you continue your journey in professional development, sit in on webinars. There's so many webinars because of COVID-19. There's no reason not to be upskilling at the moment. Listen in, and you can only go up. You can only grow. You can't go backwards. You can only grow and become more knowledgeable in your space. But it's about understanding when you have no idea what's going on, or a client comes to you and you just really don't know the answer, and that's okay. And it's just about sitting back and being like, I actually don't know this answer, but I will find out for you. Or I'm going to refer you to someone who does know the answer, because it's important that we find you the answer. So don't be scared of the unknown. And the unknown only stays unknown until you dive into it.
Fantastic advice. And if a student is very interested in pursuing a career as a, say, a remote dietitian, what are some steps that they could take during their studies that would put them in a better position to specialise?
In terms of what you could do right now is make sure you just know a little bit about everything. You don't have to be an expert in everything. Take your regional and rural placements. Like, absolutely do. Sign yourself up. Work with your employer and your family to be like, this is something I want to do. If you've never been remote and you're unsure what you're signing up for, when COVID restrictions lift, or Google it, come visit Google. And if your university doesn't offer remote or regional placement, ask them to own the local dietitian. We would love to have students. We love having students. Being in Queensland, we take, I work with James Cook Universities. James Cook University has a Centre for Remote Health out here, and we work with multiple universities, including Sunshine Coast University, Griffith University, and their students come out here and partner with me so that they can get that remote experience. Like to come really remote, there are options, just got to ask, because remote regions love having students. We love having students. So put your hands up for these scary roles. And then when you're thinking about graduating, where do you want to go? That was my question. What state do you want to be in? Does it have to be Victoria? Victoria has a lot of regional and rural areas. If you want remote like I am, you have to come into the bigger states. So you have to be looking to move. And that sounds terrifying, especially people who have never left home. It can be really scary, but you are out here with people who are not from here. All my colleagues moved here. Nobody is a born and bred local, because that's remote health. We all have taken the risk, flown in, we're all here together, and we have just such a beautiful community. As Allied Health, we go on camping trips together. We're all going for lunch together today. Everybody's in the same boat, whether you're a health professional, whether you're a teacher. We're a mining town, so whether you've come in as an engineer or into the mines, you have traveled, you've left your home and you've come here. We're all in the same boat. We all don't know people. We're all in a strange place. We all think it's ridiculously hot, and you band together. So don't be afraid of leaving home, because you will not be the outcast. You will just be a member of the gang. So pick your state. I picked Queensland because my sister was here. WA, Northern Territory and Queensland are all desperate for remote clinicians, desperate, not just dietitians. The Northern Territory does not create its own dietitians, as in their university does not have a bachelor or a master's of dietetics. So the Northern Territory rely on dietitians coming in from the other states. So it's only sign up for a year, do 12 months. You'll probably stay, because that's what everybody does. They come for 12 months, they stay for 5 years. That's just how it goes. But put your hand up and say, I'm going to do 12 months and then I'll come home if I hate it. Or maybe you'll love it and want to jump states and go into a different state. So pick a state and then just start Googling some of the remote regions. Jump on Seek, jump on LinkedIn. A big thing I like to say is, if you see an Aboriginal medical service or a remote medical service that you're like, I would love to work for them, email them. Because being remote, nobody applies for these jobs. And eventually we have to take the ad down, because it's been up there for so long, or only one or two people have applied and no one else wants to come. So do what I did. There was no job ad. I just called and said, hey, I heard you're looking for a dietitian, or hey, I'm really interested. Are you looking for a dietitian? And you'd be so surprised the amount of times they go, yes, send your resume, because job ads can only stay on Seek for so long. You know, it's expensive to keep a job ad up on Seek. Just call, take the initiative, call and be like, I'm really interested, which is exactly what I did. And here we are today. So it's just about putting yourself out there, picking up the phone, make sure your resume is done. I would really recommend your resume is done, and start looking for grad work before you finish. You're almost done. Start looking. Get your resume ready, get your cover letter ready. Make sure you've got some really great references who would support a remote or rural placement. Make sure they know that you are applying for work, and just put yourself out there. Dietitians, we're a really small group of people. We all know everyone. Reach out to other dietitians. You know, put yourself out there, put your name out there.
And I've asked you this question before, because I've had the opportunity to interview you in the past, but and you gave such a great answer. I'm going to ask you on the podcast to do this again. Can you give us an elevator pitch for why our listeners should consider pursuing a career in Indigenous health?
What did I say last time? Indigenous and or remote health is an amazing experience for graduates to learn a bit of everything, to find out what you love, to find out what you don't love, and that's okay, to really expand your skills, to push yourself in places you never even dreamed you would go. Being remote, there is very little competition. In Metro, they always talk about hundreds of applicants and you may not get an interview. Out here, I think that like there weren't even dietitians going for my role. I just rang. We have maybe 6 applicants at best for other allied health roles. You are almost guaranteed an interview and then you've just got to tell yourself. There is so little competition in remote regions of Australia because no one wants to come here for reasons I don't understand. You get to experience culture and things you would never see in metro areas. And I think I've told you before, Charlotte, one of my clients has a pet cow. So when I go to his house, which is just a house, it's not a farm, it's a house, and they have a standard backyard, there is a cow in it. And I get to hang out with a cow. And it's just the most amazing experiences that you will just never experience in metro. Not that it's a reason I'm here, but if it's anybody's interest, being remote, we do get paid a bit better as well. And we have an amazing professional development budget in Queensland, which is supported by the government. So when you come out here as a grad and you're like, I need to do professional development because I need to continue to increase my skills, the government will support you going to conferences, doing webinars, doing online training. Meeting your 30 hours PD in remote regions is really easy because there is so much support and funding for you to do that. So if you're thinking, I might work for a year and then do this course, Queensland government will help you pay for that. So there are just so many pros to coming out here, and I honestly couldn't think of any reasons to stay in Melbourne when I left. I hope that sold it. I expect to see you all here next year.
Anyone that was I just think after listening to this hour, I don't know how anyone could sit here and go, you know, completely that's a no. And just regardless of the field, what is one skill that you think nutrition students could focus on learning that would complement their more academic study?
Not even your academics, but in terms of your clinical practice, interviewing skills. It's not about a clipboard with questions and reading those questions, like what is your weight, what is your weight history? That's just not what it's about. It's about putting the clipboard down and having a real chat with someone who is feeling vulnerable, who has come to you for help. Just have a conversation with someone. Don't get bogged down by the ABCDs. And I'm sure some universities are going, oh my gosh, don't listen to her. But it's not about picking all the boxes. It's about having a real conversation with a real person. And I think that gets lost when we're doing our OSCEs and we're doing our exams. We get lost that there is a person in this conversation that really needs help. So it's about putting that down and, you know, through a chat, you'll answer your ABCDs. People naturally start talking about their weight and they start talking. The doctor told them they had high cholesterol, or you will have just direct access to the biochem. You don't even have to ask. They'll tell you they feel sick and vomiting. It will just come out. Don't really have to poke and go through a tick box. So something I'd really recommend you do is just sit down with friends that are not dietitian students and have a chat with them about food. Do a diet history on them. You know, make it more flowy. Make it a real conversation, not just robotic checklist, because humans are not a checklist. Something I think they drill us at uni about, but it's not real practice. You may not have a diagnosis at the end of your consult, and that's okay. You may need more information. You may need to speak to a mentor, or you just may need to see that client again. And that is okay. So a place I would go is motivational interviewing techniques. There are quite a few online webinars, and it's just about sitting comfortably with that client and probing questions at them in a really safe and effective way. And motivational interviewing, the actual course that you can do, is probably better suited to do after you've graduated and when you've seen a few clients and you've gotten into a routine. So the actual course is definitely worth doing in your first year of being an APD, in terms of building yourself up to that, start YouTubing, start Googling, start seeing what it's like to actually just sit in a room. I've got a round table here, and families just sit around here and just chat, you know, and what's your opening line? Hey, I'm Kiri, I'm a dietitian. Like, been dietitians before? What can I help you with? Like, what's going on today? Really opening up conversation with open-ended questions.
Wonderful. Yeah, I just think that's an amazing skill, and yeah, so important. To finish up this section, what is one bite or pearl of wisdom that you could give to current nutrition students and graduates?
You've asked me this before and I wonder what I said, because I have many pearls of wisdom and bits and pieces. Everybody eats, everybody thinks they're an expert on food. You are the expert on food. So don't let social media, other people, people with no degrees tell you what you should know. Only take that advice from dietitians and certified nutritionists and mentors. And it's a really hard nut to crack, because literally everybody eats because we need to eat to survive. But not everybody is an expert. We are the experts. Stand strong on that.
Love it.
So much confidence in this last hour. I'm like, I can do it. I love it.
And just to finish up our interview, which has been, it's just been an incredible, longer than an hour now, but so worth it. Where do you see nutrition going in the future?
We are such a young profession. Today is Dietitian's Day. Happy Dietitian Day, everybody. And this year we are looking back at history and looking at some amazing advances that dietetics has taken. And we're so young, we're only 90 years old here in Australia. We have not got one direction, we have many directions. And we need young people about standing up and being a voice, an educated voice for nutrition. An area I would really like to see it go, which is something I'm quite passionate about, is food security for our nation. COVID-19 has honestly hit the whole country with food insecurity, you know, lack of food on shelves, lack of being able to shop. In remote regions, that's just called life. And it shouldn't be, because it's 2020. There is no excuse for my family's going hungry when we have aircrafts and these amazing ways to travel that are not being utilized for our giant country. I spoke recently that we can get to England on the other side of the world in 24 hours, and it can take up to 5 days to move food from Brisbane into the outback for us. It is an area we all need to be aware of and be a part of, and understanding that there is no food equality here in Australia, and we really need to start working on it. And so I'm hoping, as a result of this food inquiry, there's a lot of organisations coming together in Queensland in particular, and we have a lot of support from our neighbours in the Northern Territory and WA, and also from Victoria, to really push this topic. So any students listening, please get involved. Please do your readings, and please just see how much research is lacking in this area, and particularly in Indigenous populations. So that's the direction I really hope I'm a part of, and a direction I really hope we see.
And to wrap up, what is your next bite? So the next project that you're working on?
I have many. In terms of a dietetic project, or like just a, right?
Give us a few if you'd like.
My biggest project at the moment would be food security research. So Gidji Healing don't have any research coming from it yet, because we're a young Aboriginal medical service. So I'm really hoping that we can go forwards in some research and really start researching security in our region, and really starting to get involved with the communities so that we can improve food access and affordability out here in our regions. So I guess from a dietetic standpoint, that's where I'm really hoping I go. I really hope Queensland goes. I'm trying to think if I've got any fun individual projects that I'm doing at the moment. Oh, during COVID, I learned how to dirt bike and bought a dirt bike. I've already come off and hurt myself, but I'm getting back on and just adding to the fun adventure that is living in the remote.
Thank you so much, Kerry. It's just been an incredible hour. You just, I think it's so clear how you, that attitude of kind of just saying yes to opportunities and going for things, or even making your own opportunities. I mean, creating your own private practice a month out of graduating. I think it's so inspiring. I think there are, we, as you said, you know, we do need to be confident in our knowledge, obviously also in confident that we don't know everything, but that we can stand as nutrition professionals in the world, even though everyone eats, not everyone is a nutrition professional. And yeah, just thank you so much.
You're welcome. And please reach out. Dietitians and nutritionists, we're a small world. Please reach out. DA have now got the SharePlate capacity. You can Google me, you can Google other dietitians. Like, please reach out. We're a really fun group. We love speaking with students and other dietitians, and we love meeting and getting together and just having really great chats about the future in our profession. So please, if anything has sparked your interest or anything, please find me on SharePlate. Please find other dietitians in your region on SharePlate, and please start building your networks. Start getting involved.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks so much, guys. That was so fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of The Next Bite with Kerry Woodington. Tiana and I absolutely loved interviewing her. She is just so inspiring and so generous with the advice that she provided. And yeah, it's amazing to see what she, you know, what a dietitian can do in these remote communities and really make a difference to the lives of so many. So we hope that you're inspired to, yeah, consider a career in a remote region. Be sure to tune in next week, where we go down the public health domain with an incredible dietitian who is also a lecturer in the Department of Nutrition at Monash. We'll see you soon.